Hey everybody, we're back, and today I'm going to talk to you about the .NET Micro Framework and .NET Gadgeteer. This is a little bit different session from the other ones that we've done here today. I think it's a fun session, probably not something you're going to use at work unless you can convince your boss to let you blow stuff up in your cubicle, but something that lets you see the reach of the .NET Framework and some of the cool things that you can do with the skills that you already have. So what is the .NET Micro Framework? The .NET Micro Framework is a version of .NET Framework, but it's a version of the .NET Micro Framework that's been optimized to work with very small devices. So we're talking devices that have speeds in, so like, you know, just a few megahertz all the way up to a few hundred megahertz. You know, we're talking 486, 386, even early Pentium class type processors, definitely not gigahertz type processors. And memory starting in kilobytes. So, you know, you might have a processor that you work on and it's only got, 300K, or maybe it only has 128K available to you. So it forces you to think a little bit about how you would build applications. You know, loading up that, multi-megabyte array to buffer something is just not going to happen on a processor like this. Now, this was originally designed for use with the Spot Watch, which was kind of a cool watch that hooked up to some MSN services and gave you access to a lot of information on there. But then it was more generalized after that to make it something that hobbyists could use, make it something that people in the industry building embedded applications can use, and really a bunch of other types of projects. And also, you know, one of the nice things about this is the devices themselves are small enough to be something that you could, say, sneak into your house without your significant other seeing what you're up to. So that definitely has some benefits as well. The Microsoft .NET Framework is all open source software. I think that's a huge win for us. This is something that has had community contributions. It's something that we've been developing in the open for quite some time. All the source code is out there. The porting kits are out there to make it so that you can easily port it to different processors, and you're free to take it and build your own devices around it. And it's not just a little bit of community contribution here. The last version, which is 4.2, which was just very recently released, has over 40% community contributed code in there. So, you know, even though Microsoft manages the project and we have our repo up on CodePlex, we still have 40% of that code coming from different vendors and from individuals in the community. So I'm pretty excited about that. If you want to build a .NET Micro Framework application, you can use Visual Studio 2010. You can use that for .NET Micro Framework 4.1 or 4.2. Both of those are both out in the wild. You'll see a lot of devices that support version 4.1, as well as some newer ones that support version 4.2. One of the nice things is, again, because it's all open source and because everybody's had access to the porting kits and stuff for a while, that the older devices are very easily upgraded to 4.2. So you'll see a lot of the older devices out there. The vendors have been updating those. If you want to code in VB, you're going to need to use the .NET Framework 4.2. Prior to that, it was all just C Sharp. And you can definitely use the free Express versions. So one of the nice things, if you look out in the community and say, what are the big development environments? What are the things that people are using for hobby development and other stuff right now? AVR and specifically Arduino is a really big one. And that has always had a free set of tools, free compilers and whatnot that go along with that. Well, equally on the Microsoft side, we also have a free set of tools, free compilers, free debuggers, everything that you would need to be able to build applications for these devices without having to spend any money. The only money you're spending is just on the device itself, which is going directly to the vendor. If you want to build on Linux or on a Mac, I know the couple people out there that have those, you can either do that on a VM on those devices, or you can use MonoDevelop for some of the different ports. Now, that doesn't work necessarily with every last port out there. It's up to the vendors and the people who actually did the port to make sure that it works on MonoDevelop. Lots of different form factors. I showed you a small one here at the beginning, which was kind of an Arduino form factor. And so if you take a look at these two different devices here, these both fall under what's known as the Arduino form factor. And that's really about having the different arrangement of the pins here, as well as the size. These are both from different vendors, but they have pretty standard layout here. Like, you can use something called a shield to plug onto that so that you can expand the capabilities of that. There's also a new set of devices that have been coming out where, rather than the shield approach, we've been looking at more of a socket-based approach. So this is the Fez Hydra. You can see the Hydra on the back here. This is an open source board that was created by GHI Electronics. And you see I have a couple of different modules attached to this. This one here happens to be an LED module. This one is an expander module for me to do different interesting things with, and this one has a button attached to it, right? But you see the difference here is, as opposed to individual pins, what we have are these different sockets, and this is a standardized socket approach. You'll see a lot more of this as I demonstrate this going forward. So that's the Gadgeteer sockets. We also have the Netuino sockets, which is something brand new from the folks over at Secret Labs. And these have a very similar type of socket approach, but it's a slightly different architecture, so they're not exactly identical. However, they look about the same, and some of the modules are compatible between the two. So we have a couple of different vendors building different projects based on those form factors. All right, and then there's also the development board approach. And development boards are typically, you know, kind of a large, looks almost like a motherboard, and it has a screen on it and has some extra memory, and it probably has a bunch of I/O ports and other stuff. And for folks that are looking to do kind of really serious embedded development work, they'll usually use those types of development boards. Actually, I recall seeing on, I think it was one of the Building Windows 8 blogs, that there was an ARM development board that was being used to test out the next version of Windows RT, right? You know, Windows on ARM, to be able to develop on that. That, what you saw there with the different I/O ports and as well as like HDMI connections and USB and stuff, is a typical development board. That's a different audience, and those are usually several hundred dollars. These different devices here, the main boards go anywhere from $20 all the way up to like $100 or so. So there's quite a bit of range on that. And then finally, we have the really small form factor devices. And I have here a game. And this game here was created by, this game unit was created by Bertrand Leroy and Fabian Royer. And sorry, guys, if I messed up your names. But this is a game that they designed. And it has inside here, there's a tiny little Netuino Mini. And this Netuino Mini runs the .NET Micro Framework. And you can use this to develop games. The games are stored on this SD card cartridge. And it's a 8x8 red pixel grid here. So some really fun stuff with this. They sell this as a kit that you can build on. And if you decide that you're done playing games with it, you can use it as just a general .NET Micro Framework device using these breakout pins here. So some really cool stuff on that. So the Arduino form factor I mentioned is physical layout compatible with the Arduino. And there's tons and tons of information out there with Arduino. It's a really huge community of folks. The language that they build in is very similar to C++, or you can directly use C++. But in our case, again, we're going to use a .NET Micro Framework. And the shields that they use, most of which are compatible with what we're using here. The shields are available from lots of different vendors because, again, they also have an open source standard so that you can pull up a shield that has, say, like Ethernet support, or you can have a shield that plays music, or another shield that's used to control motors and whatnot. And you can use most of those with the .NET Micro Framework, but you will need to write the code or find somebody who has written the what's called the driver code for that. The socket approach, which was really pioneered with the .NET Gadgeteer, is a different approach here. The .NET Gadgeteer project itself is something that came out of Microsoft Research. So, you know, great job to the folks over in Cambridge that came up with this. And they were looking for a way that was a little more friendly than just like the sort of soldering iron required approach that we had here with individual pins. What they wanted to do is say, you know, we want to make it so if somebody wants to prototype a device, if somebody has a great idea and but they don't have a soldering iron and not comfortable with all these wires and whatnot, but they have a great idea and what they really want to do is write code to run on these devices, that we could provide them kind of a plug-and-play experience where you have a designer that we'll see in Visual Studio that helps you hook up the devices. You can refer to them through code. There's standards around how the drivers are written, standards around how they're surfaced. And then they'll be able to use these with all these different Gadgeteer mainboards. And what you see here, there are three different Gadgeteer mainboards. The first one I showed you is the Hydra. Which was an open source one by GHI. Then the center one is Spider, which was also one by GHI, and it's probably their most popular one right now. There's also a third board that I'm showing here, which is from a company in the UK. And there's a fourth board from another company over in the EU. I believe it was in the EU anyway, that is going to be coming out soon. And these all adhere to the Gadgeteer standard, so the modules should be able to work with different ones. GHI also has a couple other ones that are out there and on the way as well, which I don't have here on this particular deck. Most of these are open source. That's not a requirement. Like, you can take the .NET Micro Framework, create your own board. You don't have to make it an open source board. You don't have to make your port of the .NET Micro Framework open source. In fact, the fourth one that's coming out over in the EU is not going open source with their particular version because they put an awful lot of work into porting it to that different processor, and they're also trying to build a commercial business off that. That's all cool. We have the license out there, so you can kind of do whatever you want to do with these. Now, the Gadgeteer modules are really an interesting concept. So you saw earlier I had a bunch of little kind of 10-pin wires hanging off these different main boards. Each of those goes into a different socket. And we'll see if how we're going to test the zoom on the camera here. If you take a look at this, right, you might be able to see, especially if you blow up your screen a little bit, that each of the different sockets has a letter associated with it. So a letter U means that that's a UART or serial socket so that you can hook up devices that require serial port support. You know, A for analog, X is for general digital I.O., Y is for, I think, up to 7 pins of digital I.O., something like that. And then each of those, again, depending upon the requirements for your device, you can use those in the appropriate socket. And that's where the design surface will come into play, which we'll see very shortly. The standard is vendor neutral. It's published. It's out there on CodePlex so that anybody who wants to build modules can build them, and anyone who wants to build mainboards can build them. Now, another new player here, well, the company themselves are not a new player. Secret Labs created Netuino, which I happen to have a bit of an affinity for because the Netuino was one of the very first devices that I played with and had a blinking LED on that kind of got me into all this a year and a half ago. But they've come out with something that is, again, somewhat compatible with Gadgeteer, but they went a little bit different route. Instead of having individual sockets labeled by letter and saying, if you want serial, plug it into this socket. If you want analog, plug it into this socket. If you want Ethernet support, it needs to go in that socket, SPI, et cetera, et cetera. What they decided to do was to take almost a USB type approach where their main board has the different sockets on it, and you can plug into any socket that you want. And then each module, in this case, has a coprocessor, very small 30 cent, STM processor on there with running some C code. Which identifies itself to the main board and says, here's what I need, here are the virtual pins I support, and here's what I'm going to surface to the code that you're going to run on this main board. So both of those are very interesting approaches. I happen to like them both, as you can see by the pile of stuff that I've brought with me here on the plane. Surprisingly, this stuff all made it through the plane. I have no idea how. I think they were too busy harassing some old lady about her suntan lotion or something, but they managed to pass my stuff through just fine. But I was able to bring all this stuff in here, and because once you start playing with this, it just sort of grows, and you get interested in trying out lots of different projects and trying out lots of different modules and mixing and matching things and seeing which modules are going to work with what and what can you do and what can you automate in your house and whatnot. And when I mentioned open source hardware, it really is open source hardware. When you go online, you can take a look and see the schematics for all these boards. You can see individual, even board layout files. If you wanted to take those board layout files and send them off to a PCB fabricator yourself, you're certainly welcome to, because these are open source hardware and open source software devices. Now, how does this all work? So again, you saw these little devices that I held in my hand, and typically they're connected to the PC via USB. And one thing that's not always clear to folks is when you look at this device right here and that little processor on there, your application is running on that processor. you can take, write your code that does, you know, your security alert for your house or opens your garage door or does whatever kind of interesting thing that you want it to do. And you can upload it to this device via serial, debug it via, via USB, debug it via USB if you want. And then as long as you provide some sort of power to this afterwards, you can go and just stick it in a box somewhere and have it run just fine all by itself. You no longer need a PC connected. It is truly a disconnected microprocessor that's just going to run whatever program that you've put in there. Every time you reset it or reboot it, it's just going to run that same program over and over, and it's going to loop forever, right? So it's pretty neat things there. So that code, though, you know, you develop this on your workstation, you compile it on your workstation, then you take that and you deploy it over USB. Some can go over serial if you'd like as well, but typically over USB to this device. You can step through the code as it's running on the device itself, so that when you're trying to debug something, you can stick a breakpoint in there, and it's communicating across USB to identify, you know, what line of code you're on and all the usual things you would expect from a client-side debugging experience. You're getting remotely over USB here. So that's something that's really kind of cool. And then once it's deployed to the device, that device has a bootloader firmware that's going to load up the .NET Micro Framework firmware. Which, by the way, if you don't want to code in a .NET Micro Framework, you're free to pave any of these boards and just write in C or Assembly or C++ or whatever you want. They're just microprocessors. There's compilers for them out there. Most of them you can target using just GCC, and you're fine with being able to deploy code that way. But then if you're running the .NET Micro Framework, that runtime interprets your .NET code on that device. And so that's an important distinction between this device and some other ones. Your code is actually being interpreted on the device, so these are not necessarily appropriate for like real-time audio processing or doing digital audio conversion and things like that, where folks need to get a lot of bits through here very, very quickly. No, this code is actually interpreted. Now, some of the vendors have also provided extensions to allow you to make calls sort of like p-invoke on these devices, so you can call directly into, say, C++ code. I know GHI is one of the ones that did that. That's a little bit outside the scope of the standard itself, but it is nice if you need to escape and get out in something that's going to be a little bit more higher performing. So what are people making with these? This is the first question everybody asks me. They say, wow, Pete, these are really kind of cool devices, but what the heck am I going to use one of these for, right? So first of all, don't even ask yourself that question. Just get a board, because it's going to become self-evident the first time that you make an LED blank. Suddenly you're going to think of all the cool projects that that you can do with this. I have a number of friends who make beer as part of their hobby. I know that they have different proprietary devices that have temperature sensors and other things that they use to automate the process and to monitor the process. And you could certainly create devices that do that for you using the .NET Micro Framework just because you can, right? And then these could then take that information and upload it to a network server, or they could upload it to something like PatchBay, which is spelled P-A-C-H-U-B-E, but pronounced PatchBay, which is a site specifically designed for connecting all these different devices into kind of a really big Internet of Things, right? So you can upload data to that. You can do whatever you want with it. You can adjust the code to do different things that you want. I have an aquarium in my office. I can do an aquarium controller to automate some of the parameters of that. You can buy pH sensors. They are somewhat expensive, but you can get those, temperature sensors certainly and whatnot. Some folks have made automated pet feeders, which is kind of amusing. You can certainly see that on YouTube if you just go and take a look, where they've built like these giant cardboard contraptions while they're away that they can kind of dial their house with their phone. Then it's going to connect them to that device, right? Either over TCP/IP or something else, connects them with that device that's attached to this feeder, which just rotates like a large wheel, which dumps some food into a food bowl. So, it's sort of an interesting way to take care of your pets, but I think it's kind of fun. People are building robots, CNC controllers. Home monitoring and security is a big area. Being able to do things, across the spectrum of your house for, automating all sorts of different things inside your house, temperature controllers and whatnot. And again, folks are looking at ways to integrate these with their phones, where some folks have a way to, over TCP/IP, contact their house and tell it to turn the temperature up a couple of degrees, which is also kind of interesting, right? You hope there are no bugs in that. You might end up coming back to an igloo or something. I don't know. You can write web servers that run on these. A lot of these have Ethernet ports, or they have some way of accessing via wireless or something else network servers. So there are tiny little web servers that are built into this. There is an HTTP stack that is available on all these devices, so you're able to use kind of higher level mechanisms. There's also sockets and whatnot, so you can use that as well. One of the coolest projects I saw, which was an Arduino project, was a build machine controller, and they had sort of this large console that was sitting in front of them. And when they wanted to deploy something, you know, they had buttons to build it, and then when they wanted to deploy something, they had a kind of a War Games-esque nuclear control center thing where, you know, two people had to flip up the switches, they had to both turn the key at the same time, they press the big deploy button, then the code goes out to production. So, again, very cool things that you can do with that. Why might you be interested in working this? Like, what kind of stuff would you want to do? And maybe why would you even want to bother getting into this to begin with? So first of all, you can rapidly prototype hardware ideas. So if you're thinking of something, like, you know, you're thinking of creating some new machine for your house, or you're looking at, in my case, I was interested in synthesizer stuff. I have zero musical talent, but I like to play with synthesizers just to mess around with them. I needed to create a large MIDI through box that I could just take one input and sort of fan that out into multiple different synthesizers. And so I was able to design a board to do that. But let's say you wanted to do that instead of doing it all in electronics. You don't know a whole lot of electronics yet. It's just not your thing. You never went to EE class or anything along those. But you know how to code. You know how to code in C# really well. So you can solve these problems a lot of times in code. So you can design a device that does exactly what you're looking for in your house, that automates the stuff, or, for example, gets the MIDI information out to those different machines. And more importantly, I think, is it helps you think a little bit differently about how you develop applications. So when you're dealing with just a couple hundred K or less of memory available to you, and when you're dealing with processors that are 48 megahertz or even slower, and you're dealing with interpreted code, you can't do some of the same things that you can get away with on, you know, your 6-core, 4 gigahertz machine, you know, with 16 gigs of memory at your house, right? You can't go and, say, create a large array of long values that, you know, has a couple of thousand entries in it, because you suddenly find that you're just out of memory. So it forces you to really kind of think back and say, you know, how am I going to go in and write really tight code that's going to run really well on this device? I don't have to worry about multitasking. I own the device that I'm working on. Let me concentrate just on writing the most efficient code that I possibly can write in the language that I have chosen. And it's kind of like the same appeal that's driven a lot of people in Europe to kind of take back up the Commodore 64 stuff again. Like, anybody who knows me that's watching knows that I'm a big Commodore 64 fan. There are lots of people in Europe that are out there building new applications for that, because they like the challenge of trying to fit as much code as possible and as much functionality as possible into 64K of memory, or in the case of some of the other competitions that are currently being held, a 16K cartridge, right? So this is a challenge for them, and I think it can also be a challenge for you, and again, makes you know, step back and rethink some of the stuff that you maybe do every day in your own applications. And besides, it's, you know, we're all geeks, right? So I think it helps you kind of geek out a little bit without having to go and relearn another language. You know, not all of us have the time to go and learn something like assembly specific to different processors. Let's just use C# and then do something cool with that. So some specific examples here of stuff that I found very interesting. I mentioned already the game. So this is the game that I designed on top of the device that Bertrand and Fabian had created. And this one is a little River Raid clone, where you have to use the joystick and navigate through these sort of single color mazes here without hitting the edges. And so that was kind of a fun little project. I was able to do it in an evening using the toolkits that they provided. So very cool stuff. Here's another one where a person really kind of went nuts. And this is enough, this has enough of your typical daily work in it that you could probably end up expensing the device. So keep that in mind. This one has a Windows Phone application that integrates with Windows Azure and is able to control a lawn sprinkler for this person's lawn. So probably world's most expensive lawn sprinkler, but I think it's a very cool idea that they're able to automate all this. Oh, so Stefan Thulin asked me, and hi, Stefan, what's the most awesome NetMF project that you've ever seen? Oh, man, nothing like putting me on the spot. I like some of these ones, like this one that's in front of me here, I think is pretty cool idea. I think this shows a lot of different integration with, again, with the phone, also with Azure and a lot of other stuff. This is stuff like this is why I can actually get away with talking about this all the time, right? Because it's, you know, it sort of fits in with all our other projects and whatnot. But I think this is definitely one of the cooler ones. Also, some of the boards that I've seen developed, I'm actually interested in some of the modules that I've seen developed as products in and of themselves. So, for example, GHI put together a video output module so that you'll be able to create video games that you can go and run on your TV. It has a regular VGA out, and it also has a good old-fashioned RCA-style output on it for, you know, I have a Commodore 1902 monitor or whatever sitting behind me in my office, so it would actually work with that. So all those types of things are pretty cool. I've also seen some very interesting robots. And then probably one of them that is closest to my own heart is I've seen some folks starting to work on CNC machines that are controlled by the .NET Micro Framework. And in the past, that hasn't really been possible, but we're starting to get more and more powerful devices that, you know, like the Hydra, I think, was several hundred megahertz, if I remember correctly. So, you know, they're starting to get powerful enough to be able to do real-time interpolation of, you know, paths when you're doing CNC machines. And if you haven't seen CNC machines before, you know, one example is that you have a table in front of you, and it has a router on it, and you put down something on there, and you load up a set of toolpaths, and it goes and cuts out an interesting shape for you. So a lot of little like boards that you develop, like for example, this board here that has a whole bunch of my Gadgeteer stuff on it, I ran through a CNC machine because there was no way I was hand drilling all those holes on here, right? So, you know, you can automate all that, right? So I think those, Stefan, would be some pretty cool projects. And if there's anything that you want to particularly call attention to that I missed, feel free to bring it up. So you can also do things like design your own musical instruments. This is something that I'm working on that I think is a kind of a cool way to use the technology. This is not an example of a... It looks kind of like my office, but this is not my office. This is a lab at MIT, if I remember correctly, that has all handmade synthesizer stuff. So very cool things you can do with that. If you look on YouTube at all for Imperial March and floppy drives, you'll find 8 million examples of people who have managed to play the Imperial March or Nyan Cat or, Still Alive or any of those other ones. Yeah, Staying Alive would be kind of nasty, but Still Alive is okay. Any of those songs on a floppy drive just by controlling the resonance in the stepper drive that's inside there. So you can get some really interesting things with that. And you can certainly do that from .NET Micro Framework as well using some motor controllers. I hope some of you have some ideas so far. Here's a robot that I built that's powered or controlled by Netduino, and it has a sensor on the front that can figure out how far away it is from something. It's just an ultrasonic sensor that, you know, pings something and returns back roughly the distance, plus or minus some margin for error. And this one has some very basic Netduino code that just goes and says, all right, is there anything in front of me? There is. All right, I'm going to turn a little bit. Back up. Is there still something in front of me? Yep. Turn a little bit more until it finds a way that to get through that's very clear. Scott says, yes, Scott Kuhn. Hey, Scott. Radio Shack also sells Arduino and Netduino boards in their stores, I've heard. Yes, and that's new. Amazingly, Radio Shack has decided to stop being just the cell phone store and actually sell some cool stuff. So they have, ping sensors. Like, this is something that I'll show a little bit later here. But this is an ultrasonic sensor. They sell those. They sell Arduino. I haven't seen Netduino there. If they have Netduino, that's even more awesome. So very cool. And kudos to Radio Shack for finally remembering their roots on that. So robots, very awesome. And of course, robots can go a bit nuts, so you know you want to. So let's stop yapping here a little bit, and let's actually take a look at some of these things that I've got. So I'm going to go back and forth here and show some of the code in the editor, as well as some of the debugging experience, and then some stuff that's actually happening on these boards themselves. So I'm going to give the camera lady here a bit of a workout on zooming in and out. All right, so I'm going to open up Visual Studio. And again, you can use the free version. I happen to have other reasons for having Ultimate here. So I'm going to go, let's see, Micro Framework, and I think I'm going to do a Netduino Go application as my first app here. And Netduino Go is this device here, which I showed kind of early on, which is one of the socket-based devices. And I'm going to do kind of the typical blinking LED type example as our first foray into this. And then somebody said, Mr. Temesh says, is there a distinction between digital and analog pins like an Arduino? And is there direct support for motors in the .NET Micro Framework? So is there a distinction between digital and analog? Yes. And in fact, the Netduino stuff, as I mentioned, is pin compatible with Arduino. So there are, you know, the analog pins also function as digital pins. The analog pins also have, I believe this is a 10-bit resolution analog to digital converter, but I could be wrong there. And I also believe the later models are 12-bit, if I remember correctly. But there is a distinction. Now, on the Netduino Go, it's a little different, where it really depends on what the module is surfacing. So if you wanted to create a module that has surfaced, say, 32 analog pins, if you found a small controller that or a way to surface those pins, you can surface 32 analog pins from that and surface those as virtual pins to the main board. And the reason is because everything that goes in between the module and the main board, in the case of the Netduino Go, is a digital protocol that goes across SPI, if I remember correctly, that is really just about making it easy to virtualize pins. Now, on the Gadgeteer, if you want to do analog work, you have to use a socket that has letter A, like this one here. So I don't expect you to actually see the A, but trust me, there's an A there. That socket can have up to, I believe, 3 analog devices connected to it. So, you know, joysticks, potentiometer, the touch part of this touchscreen interface here, those are all analog devices. So again, a little bit different approach between the different devices here, but there is still a distinction. John Galloway says, is there a way to have multiple devices communicate or coordinate? Seen any examples? So I think we're back to Skynet on this one. Thank you, John. Yes, you can have them communicate and coordinate. I haven't seen a good example of that yet. Part of that has to do with like latency and whatnot, but they all have networking available to them so that you could certainly have them communicate just like you would a PC or anything like that. They also surface the sort of lower level chip-to-chip protocols like SPI and I2C are two protocols that you'll see usually for communicating between different chips. Like if you looked at a motherboard inside a PC and you had to figure out, you know, how the different chips are communicating to each other on that, they're either doing it parallel, which means they are using up, 32 lines or however many, or 64 lines, which would be a bit nuts, 64 pins on one processor, 64 pins on the other, and just sending that all over. Or they could be using a protocol like SPI, or probably less likely, I2C, or maybe even some other ones that Intel has themselves, right? But those are more serial protocols that are made to run much faster and made to communicate or allow different chips to communicate together. So yes, you could, John. I haven't seen it yet, but I think that would be kind of a really fun project to put together. But again, I warn you folks, watch out how many of these you connect together in kind of a intelligent net, because we've seen how that ends. All right, so let me, okay, good. So let me go into my program here. And this is the Netduino application. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a reference. You see everything here looks pretty much just like any other Visual Studio stuff. So I'm going to add a reference and notice just a little bit of trivia here. You see those Microsoft.spot namespaces. I mentioned earlier that this was created originally for the Spot Watch. Well, those namespaces and assembly names still persist in this, so you'll still see Microsoft.spot all over the place. But I'm going to add reference to Netduino Go.button, potentiometer, and RGB LED, because I'm going to do a little bit of stuff here with the light itself. And I think the first thing I'll do is I'm going to have an instance of the RGB LED. So I'm going to create a static Netduino Go dot, I'll probably have to use this here. Oops, let's see. Let me pull this up. resolve. No, okay. Oh, you know what? Because I'm doing a namespace. That's never going to work. I know all you folks are going, Pete, it's in the wrong spot. All right. Static Netduino Go dot RGB LED. LED equals new, and then same thing. Now, the .NET Micro Framework isn't exactly the same as what you have in the full .NET framework. Like, we don't have generics, and we don't have a bunch of other stuff. I have Vanna White in the other room showing me how much time I have left. It's kind of funny. We don't have generics. We don't have some of the other things we're used to in the .NET framework itself, because it's made to be pretty trim. You know, I've done a lot of work in Silverlight. We know that's a pared-down version of the .NET framework. This is even more pared down. And then there's a bunch of other stuff added on for direct pin access and kind of other things like that, right? So now I've got this RGB LED here. And what I want to do is I want to create an instance of a button. So I'm going to say Netduino go.button. I could do var, yes, new button. And now I want to hook up an event handler dot, let's see, button pressed. So there's a, for pressing that button, and then I'm going to do button released as well, dot. Now what's interesting about this is, these higher level constructs like this button and stuff here are just code that are provided by the vendor in this case. This is from Secret Labs from Netduino that wrap underlying pins and whatnot. You can still go to individual pins and say, if this pin is true or false, or in case of a tri-state port, you can check to see if it's at this kind of high Z value as well. You can just check those directly and implement all your own stuff at individual pin level, or you can use these higher level abstractions and work with these directly. Now, I know like things like buttons and stuff, it's usually better to work with these higher level ones because they'll have code that it does things like handles what's called debouncing. Like when you actually press a button, it isn't a solid one. There's a little bit of time where you press it and it just sort of wobbles for a second because it's a mechanical device and you need to be able to factor that out. All right, so let's see, button released here. I'm going to take this RGB LED, so LED.setColor, and it's going to be 000. So that's going to turn the LED off. And then for pressing that button, I'm going to set it to, let's say, all red, no green, and all blue. So we should get kind of a nice purple color out of that. Now, the last thing I need to do, and this is something that's very different for most desktop developers and web developers, is I need to hog the processor. I need to make sure this program stays running forever. So I can say thread.sleep timeout.infinite, right? And that makes sure that the program doesn't just end at that point. Now, there's a question here from Nick V. Is there an SDK to support Connect on Netduino? I'm not aware of one, and I think that would actually be pretty challenging to do. And the reason behind that is because most of the difficult bits of working with the Kinect are all done in software. So the Kinect itself is a really cool piece of hardware, but as far as I know, and Rob Relier can sort of send me a mail bomb if I'm wrong on this, but as far as I know, the Kinect itself doesn't have an awful lot of smarts. You know, it knows how to focus and knows how to take the pictures and get the depth information over, but in terms of like skeletal tracking and in terms of actually making sense of the Z buffers and a bunch of other stuff, that's typically all code. And something like, say, like a Netduino, like a classic Netduino is 48 megahertz. It's not going to have a ton of bandwidth. It also has very little available K, memory, I think like 128K or something like that. So it's simply not going to be able to handle that stream of data coming across. You could probably hack it to be able to get it to do some kind of partial stuff, especially with some of the higher memory devices that we have here, but it's not going to be the same experience as you would get like on your PC or something like that. So in those cases, you might want to sort of pair up a PC along with a device like this. And that's actually the model that was chosen for some of the Microsoft Robotics Studio robots, where they have a small laptop sitting on top, and it handles all the Kinect integration and whatnot. That has a microcontroller sitting underneath, and it's handling all the synchronization of the motors and taking in sensor input and a bunch of other stuff like that, right? Nicholas Stein, is there any digital control of relays to turn on and off lights or pumps? Why, yes, there is, and if I can show this here. This right here is a board with four relays. right? So that you can go and then wire up 120, or there might be 240 volt support on some of these. Do that with caution, right? You know, 5 volts, couple hundred volts, there's going to be a little difference there in terms of level of possible personal injury, right? So be careful with that. But yes, there are tons of different relays. I also have one at home that I think has like 16 or 18 relays, because GHI was getting rid of those at a really low price at one point. And just because it doesn't have a driver already written doesn't mean I can't use it. So I'm going to be able to use it just fine. All right, so back to my program here. I've got an LED I've created. I've got a button that I've created on this. And that's how to automatically notice. I didn't have to tell it where the button was connected or where the LED was connected. Those devices are going to automatically identify themselves on the Netduino. And so what I need to do then is, let's see if it all compiles, make sure I didn't mess something up. I'm going to start debugging here. And then rebooting. Found the debugger. Okay, and so let's see. The hello button. Where's my button? Okay, there we go. Oh, I didn't see the blue light. There we go. All right, so now if I press the button, I get the purple light. I'm probably burning our cameras here. That's cool. I should have brought a laser. That would have been much more fun. And I can just turn the light on and off, right? So that's kind of interesting. I think this is the type of project that's going to win me a Nobel Prize or something. So that's cool. So let's move on and do this. So if I go here and debug this again, and we can just show the IDE, don't need the device. It comes up. These are very tiny devices. They take a little minute to come up. All right, so now if I press the button on this, you see we get right into a breakpoint. I can step through it. It sets the LED color, and then it moves on, right? Now, and it yells at me because I don't have that source code here, but that's okay. So I'm able to step through this code right here inside the editor, and that's something that's actually pretty unusual in the microcontroller development world. Like, I can do similar things with AVR chips at my house, but it required an external box called a JTAG debugger that you have to attach to all this and has to be set up with certain pins and all that kind of stuff. This is just built into the .NET Micro framework, and it just automatically happens across USB. So I thought that was pretty cool. So let me do one last thing with this before we take a look at the other boards here. I want to add in some way for me to modify the color. So I'm going to add in a potentiometer. Netduino go dot potentiometer. And by the way, the board that I showed you that I have these devices mounted on, not the one that I made myself, but the other ones here, those are just Tamiya boards that you can use for robotics and other stuff. They have the required 5 millimeter hole spacing, so you can get them for like $10. And it really makes it easier for you to pull these devices around everywhere. So I'm going to create this potentiometer. All right. So I've got an instance of that. And now what I want to do is, when you change the value in the potentiometer, I want that to somehow affect the color. So I think a really easy way for me to do this would be, I'm going to have it affect the red value of this color. I'm going to say potentiometer.getValue. And that's going to return back a float between 0 and 1. So I'm going to multiply that by 255. And then I'm just going to cast the whole thing to a byte, so this doesn't yell at me. And so what should happen now is, each time I press the button, and I could do this the opposite way and just have it change the color in real time. I have an example of that on my blog. But in this case, each time I press the button, it's going to take the value from that potentiometer and use that to decide the color that's going to show up. So let me do this and make sure I've created an instance of that pot. Yep. Deploying. All right, and so initializing, rebooting. Sometimes you have to help it reboot. Let's help it reboot. Oh, unless I bricked my device here, which could be. Sometimes you really have to help it reboot. Let's try that one. if you think demoing software on a stage is difficult, you should try demoing these devices, all the stuff connected to them. All right, so let's deploy this again. All right, stop this, start debugging. And if this doesn't work, I might have done something crazy to break it. Let's see. Oh, there we go. Hey, found debugger. Yay. All right. So there we go. All right. So blue. And then if I change this, I can have it go slowly to purple. There we go. And I'm doing this just to make the video encoding process more complex here. Here we go. So very cool. All right. Enough of that for the moment. I think I've got a little bit of time left here. So the next thing I want to show you, that was all the new Netduino Go, which, again, I'm a fan of. I think that's a really cool product. But then there's also another set of products here that all fall under kind of the gadgeteer moniker. And that's, again, most of those right now are by GHI Electronics, but also Seed Studio is making modules, and other people have made some cool modules too. And speaking of cool modules, so I mentioned I'm interested in synthesizers, so I actually designed for the Gadgeteer, I designed a MIDI module, and that's this guy right here, where it has a MIDI in and out, and it can communicate through serial, through a U for UART port here, directly back to the main board, and I can use this to control synthesizers and stuff. So if I untangle my disastrous mess of wires here, I can just put this in MIDI out. And I have also up here a small synthesizer, which is, let's see if I can, that's probably about as high up as I can go. This is a MeBlip device, all right, and this is just a monophonic synthesizer, and that's one that I built from a kit from some folks in Canada. Really great stuff there. Oddly enough, this held up the security line, but all the rest of my stuff didn't, so I have no idea what was going on in the airport that day. So I've got that, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you a really cool demo of something that my friend Andrew Duthie had created. So Andrew Duthie is a developer evangelist over on the East Coast, over where I live, and he created something called the MeBlipiator. And here's the design surface, right? This is a design surface for building Gadgeteer applications, and you can drag and drop your modules on here and have it help you hook those up. My MIDI module is right here. That's this blue module over here on the left. There's also a joystick module involved in this, a button module, and the large touchscreen display. So what Andrew did is he created a small sequencer that can work through the MIDI module and can sequence audio on any of these types of devices. So very cool stuff. Let me see if I can run this. And I went totally low-tech here on the audio support. We'll see how that goes. And I know I often have to reset this, so we'll try that. And we're deploying to the Gadgeteer device. Preparing. I'm getting a lot of that today. Don't prepare, just, oh, there we go. All right, just being impatient. You notice a trend here. We're often rebooting these small devices. That just happens to be how they work. Because you know, you're writing code that's going to take up pretty much all the. It's going to be the only thing running on that device. So, you know, when that when the device starts up, it's automatically set to run whatever application is on there. So that's really what's going on. All right. So now, here is Andrew's MeBlipiator. I didn't name it, Andrew did, so you can blame him for anything that's really kind of funky there. And what he has is the touch screen. Can that be seen on there? Hopefully not too glare. He has a touch screen here, which he designed. And these devices actually support a version of WPF, but this was actually designed in a different thing called Glide, which is from GHI Electronics, right? And he has a step sequencer, so you can set the different steps for the audio, and then when you press a button, I believe it's this one, and I'm not actually playing any music here, any real song anyway, let's see if we can speed it up. Come on, Andrew. All right. Doesn't want to line up. It doesn't want to go up for me. Okay. Let me pause it. Now, all right, my touch is off a little bit on this. But he's got it going through and able to adjust the speed of it, adjust the notes of it, and go through and whatnot. So I think some kind of cool stuff there. I do appreciate what you've done, Andrew, with that. But if you look at and his blog is devhammer.net, and he's got all the source code for it up there that you can take a look at. So definitely check that out. But he's taken this module that I have here, and he's taken the driver that I wrote, and the driver is available over on CodePlex. I've got a Git repo on CodePlex that has information about the MIDI module here, and you can get all the source code for that. So he took that example, and he went and he integrated it in with the rest of these modules. And each of these is a different plug-and-play module, each of which has its own driver code associated with it. And he just sort of synchronized them together and said, hey, I'm going to use a touch screen, I'm going to use a MIDI module, I'm going to start it all when you press a button, I'm going to end it when you press the button a second time. And the joystick was actually set to control the filter there, so we could do a little bit of kind of dub wobble if we really wanted to, and if I thought I could get away with that. So very cool stuff there. And then, all right, so one question. Alan Fleiss, I'm sorry if I butchered your last name there. Are there any interface and or library to communicate with EIB KNX bus for home automation systems? So I'm not actually familiar with those specific buses, but there are, I know in the Arduino world, there are some different devices you can interact with. I haven't seen any that specifically have like a module format, but again, if you take any one of these devices, you don't have to be limited just to the module format. You can use one of these breakout boards and you can write your own code for it. You don't have to go through and actually create your own circuit board, but you can create whatever code you might need to go and run that. So an example of the breakout boards, this right here is a tiny little breakout board that'll work with Gadgeteer or with Netuino, and all it does is it takes the 10 pins that are coming through on the socket and breaks them out so that you can hook up other stuff. In this case, I have a ping sensor set up to connect to that, right? So again, so you should be able to connect to those. I don't know if there's code out there. But the other thing is you can send me an email at pete.brown@microsoft.com and I can ask around, or you can ask on the TinyCLR forums, which is what GHI does, or over at Secret Labs at netuino.com on the forums that are there. So, and I'm sure somebody will help you out if somebody isn't already answering your question on Twitter as you ask it. All right, so let me go to the next example that I had here. And actually, let me show this, and then I'll show a very simple example after this. So if I go over here to this Gadgeteer ping project, and if I have a couple minutes left at the end, I'll show you how to actually get these modules on the design surface. So I've created a simple project. I literally did that last night in the hotel room. That's where all the best like kind of device work comes out. Where I have a button on here, and then I also have my MIDI module, again, kind of messing with synthesizers. And I've decided to integrate that with this ping sensor, because, you know, the first thing I do whenever I come out here is I stop at Fry's and see what kind of interesting stuff they have, because we don't have Fry's out on the East Coast. So I stopped there, and I got this ping sensor. And this sends out ultrasonic... This sends out ultrasonic waves, sound waves, to figure out the distance between it and something that's in front of it. Now, these, depending upon sounds that are in the room, depending upon lights, any number of other things, their accuracy varies. It also varies with how good your code is, and my code from the hotel room is not spectacular. But I think it's going to work for what I'm going to use it for here, which is kind of like... almost like a theremin. So I'm going to just plug this in to the board, and I'll hold this up afterwards. All right. So I've got this plugged into the board. Let me hold it up after I'm actually running it. And I'm going to deploy this application out. Preparing to deploy assemblies to device. I do see that a lot. Part of the problem with having infinite loops inside applications is they take up CPU time, and the debugger has to sort of find a way to get in there and tell the device to reset and deploy all this stuff over. So sometimes it takes a little bit. All right, so now it's rebooting. Again, you should be familiar with that. Antonio asks, any module for GSM and SMS? Yes, Seeds. Well, I'm not sure GSM SMS. I'm not sure what it implements, but there is a cell phone module at Seed Studio, SEED.com. So you can check there. That's a Gadgeteer module. A temp monitor with alerts via GSM SMS would be useful. Yeah, that could be pretty cool. As a matter of fact, Seed has that. Both GHI and Seed have the temperature monitors. There's also, if you really wanted to, there is a pulse oximeter. Like if you wanted to mess around with that, you know, figure out how much oxygen's in your blood and all those kind of interesting things. All right, so I see this is actually running here now, and it's telling me the distance in centimeters between it and whatever it can figure out is 240. Hey, it's actually working fairly well. Oop. All right, so not exactly. I'm gonna do this all day. Maybe I will. Okay. All right, so what I did with this then is it's taking the I was gonna bring a round of applause just for grins here. I can hear you applauding. It takes the distance from the sensor and it maps that to a MIDI note, and then it does some rounding off of it, and then it sends that over to the MIDI device here to actually play, and it pulls that on a regular basis. If I remember correctly, I'm using a timer, which we'll see here in a second. And every time that timer ticks, it says, hey, what's my distance? Go and send a MIDI note on message to this device. So again, you get to do the... So, cool stuff there. Let's take a look at that code real quickly. All right, so... If I go over into program.cs, I created my own parallax ping module. And the code for this I got from Valentin. I believe it was Valentin, posted it up on the GHI forums for an example of how to access these devices here. So I went and wrapped that all up here into this, did some modifications to make it work with the Gadgeteer. Not many modifications required. The .NET code ports pretty well across these different devices. And he has a function in here that says get the distance. And getting the distance involves reading the length of a pulse coming from the ping sensor. So he's able to read the length of that pulse, figure out the distance based on that, and return back that number. And then he can convert it to inches or centimeters. And then the main code for the application sets up a timer. So in this case, I am setting up a timer with a 500 millisecond delay. Then I set up an event handler for that tick. Now, if you've ever done microcontroller programming for anything else, being able to have just event handlers here is amazing, because dealing with all the stuff that you'd had to do with interrupts and other stuff when you're doing like C code on a microcontroller is not impossible to do, but it is quite a bit more complex than working with just straight .NET style event handlers. But it gets the distance, then it sets a minimum note, in this case 30, then it does some rounding by dividing and multiplying by 10, and then it says, hey, as long as a note is less than 128, because 127 is the highest note you can send via MIDI. Then it goes in, turns off the previous note, and sends the next one. And then it also helps to keep you from having a different... If no sound, it probably looks like I'm doing a really bad robot. All right. So that's cool. And I have 5 minutes left here, so I'm going to do one last example where I'm going to show you in the .NET Gadgeteer how to get started, just like what I did with the Netuino. But I'm going to unplug this little sensor here, and I'm going to turn off my speakers because that has a kind of a nasty hum. And then I'm going to light up an RGB LED here. So let's make sure I've got the RGB LED actually connected. Yes, it is. Big rat's nest of cables. So that's on pin 6. All right. So I'm going to say file, new project. And I'm going to go into Gadgeteer, .NET Gadgeteer application. And this will create a new project here. If I go into my toolbox, now see, this is a little different. Because the sockets have specific letters and you can only connect them up a certain way, there's a design surface built in that makes it quite a bit easier for you to figure out. Now, I'm not using a Hydra, I'm using a spider, so I'm going to drag the spider. I'm going to drag the spider onto the design surface, say yes, I want to replace that. So this is the board that I'm using. And then I want to have a button. So here's a button, and then I'm going to have, let's see, an LED 7, or let's see, RGB LED, so which one? Display Ethernet, where is that? Light sensor, multicolor LED, that's it. I'm looking for RGB LED. Okay, So this multicolor LED here is one of the modules. And again, if I look and see where I'm connected up, that multicolor LED is connected up to socket 6. All right, so I could just have this automatically connect everything up for me. Like if I didn't know how to connect this up, I could either start dragging, you see it highlights which ones I'm allowed to connect it up to, or I could right click and say connect all modules. But instead I'm just gonna go to 6. So there we go for number 6. And then the button that I have here, this one is going to be on 4. So I'm gonna pluck that over on 4. And now, of course, this is drag and drop in programming, right? There's no data grid here, but it's still drag and drop, right? It is generating behind the scenes for me just instances of the code that I need to interact with those. So if I look at the generated code for this, it creates a instance of a button, an instance of a multicolor LED, and then it has its main function where it's going to call these different other functions in the code, initialize modules, start programming, and then run. Now, because of this higher level stuff being baked in, I don't have to have the thread.sleep timeout infinite here like I would on the other module. So again, a slightly different programming style. Alfred, can we expect to see Enterprise Library running on .NET Micro Framework? Yeah, I'll get right on that. Seriously, I'm not sure. You could probably port some of the stuff over, but probably not most of it. All right, so let me very quickly go in and put some code here in the last couple of minutes. I'm going to say Gadgeteer App 5. There's a program started event here. I'm going to say button.buttonPressed. Now, this button was automatically generated for us, right? So I didn't have to create it. And button.buttonReleased. And I want to have, let's see what that that LED was named again, just LED, okay. So I'll say LED dot, and I can go in and, let's see, if I want to turn blue, turn off, there we go. So LED dot turn off for release, and then for button press, I can say LED dot turn blue, all right. So now when I run this, it's deploying now. And deploy, deploy, deploy. I have 1 minute for you to deploy. Reboot. There we go, starting. All right. And if I pull this up here and if I press and this button, oops, here we go. We see, oh, that's right, this, I don't have the right firmware on here, so it turned green instead of blue, but that's a bug that's been fixed since then. But here we go. I press it, turns green, let go, turns off. So very cool stuff. I hope that this is something that you'll consider working with yourself. I get a lot of enjoyment out of messing around with the .NET micro framework. I knew literally nothing about electronics before a year and a half ago when I started playing with this stuff. And then since then, I've been able to design my own MIDI module circuit boards and do a bunch of other kind of really cool projects. So definitely something worth looking into if you're a .NET programmer who wants to kind of expand your horizons and get into some other really cool things. Thanks, and enjoy the rest of the day.